He was installed as the director of Iran's nuclear research center, which it was called NRC, and R&D Management and Research. During the next few years, after 1974, Tar Zadeh successfully conducted a massive program to obtain and install the technology capable of producing nuclear weapons.
And this was in what time period?
1974.
Now, one thing that the audience should bear in mind is that in this time period, and this was this late 74 after Nixon was out of office?
That was the that's correct.
But Henry Kissinger,
as a matter of fact, in 1974, this happened by mid-1974.
Okay, then Nixon perhaps would have been in his closing days, but the Nixon and Ford administrations from a national security standpoint were a continuum, and Henry Kissinger, who was the primary architect of American national security policy and foreign policy in that time period, had tabbed the Shah of Iran, and of course we know that in 74, from your previous information, previously disclosed information, Richard Helms, former CIA director and U.S. ambassador to Iran, learned in that same year that the Shah had cancer, and then the search on behalf of the U.S. national security establishment for a viable and sufficient anti-communist successor to the Shah began. The Islamic fundamentalists having been that tabbed successor, but the American geopolitical viewpoint in this time period was that the Shah, with his billions of dollars in oil revenues and consequent ability to purchase advanced weaponry, represented a very important element in Iran. Beyond that, a very important element in America's strategic position or strategic interests in that world by representing a military and armed bulwark against a possible Soviet expansionism.
That's correct.
So that this is the national security background and the strategic background to what Farah is talking about. Go ahead, Farah.
Now, the reason that this is of a major significance, which I brought up to your attention, and I promise your audience, and this would be aired for the first time, because on July 6, 1976, the NRC director, who was Dr. Tar Zadeh, signed a deal with a company called Gifted Inc. of Los Angeles, which it was a conduit of Albert Hakim Multi Corporation, Multicorp.
Now, this was an Albert Hakim proprietary?
That's correct.
And this was in what time period?
That was in July 6,
1976. 7-6-76. So we're already seeing Albert Hakim and company, and again, there's that pun, the company being a nickname for CIA, being utilized well before the Iran-Contra scandal came into public. In fact, almost a decade precisely before the public became aware of the Iran-Contra scandal, and here some of the machinations were already apparently underway.
Now, what we find also very interesting.
Farah, just one second, if I could jump in. Sorry for interrupting. But on July 6th of 76, had George Bush been confirmed as CIA director at that point?
He was a CIA director.
So Bush was CIA director on 7-6-76, just about on America's 200th birthday, as a matter of fact, the bicentennial. And here's Albert Hakim, according to your research, he's involved in activities which would give, with Mr. Tahar Zadeh?
That's correct.
And this would give Iran a nuclear capability?
That's correct.
Okay,
now,
go ahead.
When this document was signed, there is a copy of the contract available, and there is also the pro forma invoice that it was sent to Dr. Tahar Zadeh in Iran, copy of that, which it was verified by the Chamber of Commerce in Beverly Hills, is available. This contract was for a laser equipment designed to enrich weapon-grade uranium, and Tar Zadeh became a silence partner in a Gifted Inc. In the deal, although, the sale export of such equipment at the time was illegal, Hakim's partner, who arranged with a CIA contact to get it through U.S. Customs, in the Los Angeles Times article, which it was published on August 22, 1979, Gifted Inc.'s president, whose name is Naeem Perry, and is spelled N-A-I-M, Perry, P-E-R-R-Y, he justified his part in the deal by saying, and I quote, this is from LA Times article, quote, he says that he had no technical background and became involved because Liskem Corporation, Liskem was actually the manufacturer of that laser equipment, had no experience getting export license and that sort of a things. Close quote. Now, this is by the president of Gifted that sold this uranium enrichment lasers to Tarzadeh in Iran.
And he stated that who had the, did not have the expertise?
The Liskem Corporation and the scientists that who designed this laser equipment did not have the, he didn't, the owner of Gifted did not have the technical knowledge. And he says the only reason that he became involved because Liskem Corporation, and that is spelled L-I-S-C-H-E-M, which was the manufacturer of the lasers, did not have any exporting license experience, so Mr. Perry and Albert Hakim's contacts were able to arrange the export license for sending and selling this material to Iran.
Okay.
Now, on November 4th, 1976, the CIA assessment, while George Bush was a director, in a secret communique to Iran, is asking. Now, remember, this is 2 days after the election of President Carter.
Mm-hmm.
It says, quote, indication of Iranian decision to undertake nuclear weapons development. Are they any sign that Iran plans to violate the provision of a nuclear non-proliferation treaty? Close quote. Now, is Iran preparing for a nuclear war in the Middle East is the issue today. Listening to all the Bush administration's warning that we heard just before the Clinton's election to the White House about the recent nuclear acquisitions by Iran from such places as China, Kazakhstan, and Tajikistan, Pakistan, and also the North Korea, one might wonder what they failed to mention.
And what's interesting that this, as you mentioned, this these charges were being aired in the American media during the closing months of the Bush administration, and yet George Bush himself, that's one of the things I wanted to determine, was director of CIA when this undertaking was begun.
That's correct.
Go ahead.
Now, as we are proceeding with this, this is going to get a lot more interesting.
Okay, now at some point in the very near future, Farr, I want to take a break just to give the audience a chance to rest up so that they can concentrate on what you're saying, because this will overload an awful lot of people. Go ahead.
Okay. When in when we know that what they have failed to mention was that Iran's nuclear weapon program was actually created during the Ford administration by the U.S. and which became very intense by 1976. And the reason that by 1976 George Bush at the CIA is asking because by that time they had a knowledge that the Shah's demise was imminent. So now they're worried what is going to happen with Iran's nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
In 1974, when the Iranian nuclear physicist was sent to Iran to establish their nuclear program, Dr. Tarzadeh, as I said, he was a U.S. citizen. His top security post was at JPL Caltech in Pasadena, became the Iran's director of nuclear research center. His resume, which we have a copy of, clearly states that one of his main objectives, there was a development of laser technology to enrich weapon-grade uranium. That NRC's goal were laid out in a progress report prepared by Tarzadeh in October 1975, including, and I'm quoting, quote, isotope enrichment, which we're talking about, you know, uranium enrichment, mm-hmm. would be involved in enrichment and or separation of isotopes. Well-known techniques and reliable scheme would be utilized. Close quote. Goes on. Laser research and development would be involved in research and development of other laser beams. The laser will be used for various aspects of science, including laser diagnostic of plasma use in fusion work, and laser of military work, close quote. That is in 1975.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned the time period because I was interested in that. Go ahead.
Right. That is October 1975. On June 27, 1974, the New York Times reported a 10-year, $5 billion deal between France and Iran, which included five 1,000-megawatt nuclear reactors. On March 4, 1975, a $15 billion economic agreement was signed by Iran with Henry Kissinger, one of the signatories on the behalf of the United States, signing that. With a cookie jar full of money, Dr. Tarr started launching a major drive to recruit top nuclear scientists throughout the world, including of the United States, acquired supplies and constructed facilities within Iran. He made acquisitions both, not only in Europe, but also in U.S., often, enlarging his own bank account through direct kickbacks from some of the vendors, and I could name Maxwell in San Diego and Atomic Energy in San Diego. Two contracts between the NRC and the General Atomic Company of San Diego San Diego, California, illustrates his ability to make deals. And those contracts, I've got the contracts number, which is SPEL-76. One. These are all the contracts number on that contracts between him and the General Atomic Company in San Diego.
Okay, repeat that one more time.
SPEL-76-1, and in parentheses is 4, provides for a sale of nuclear instrumentation for a 5 MW pull reactor. And another contract, which is SPEL-76-1, in parentheses 5, involves a service contract for the same.
Okay, now what, do you know, Farah, what this particular technology, so I know you mentioned that uranium enrichment technology was being sold earlier, and this was under the auspices of Albert Hakim. Uranium enrichment, now nuclear matters are not my long point. Uranium enrichment technology could be used, as I understand, to upgrade reactor-grade uranium to weapons-grade uranium, and I believe that the two are different, are they not?
Well, these laser equipment that was sold to Iran by Gifted Inc. and Hakim's partners, the Gifted Inc. was one of the conduit of multi-corporation which it was developed in Iran from mid-1970s. They were buying a lot of things from the United States, from France, and in course of those transactions, in fact, what did happen was that from mid-1970s, it was the Iran's military buildup because as I mentioned, on March 4, 1979, a $15 billion economic agreement was signed by Iran and Henry Kissinger representing the United States. On June 27, 1974, New York Times reported the 10-year, $5 billion deals between Iran and France included the five 1,000-megawatt nuclear reactors. Now, also we have to remember that the Defense Security Agency, which it was a DSAA, which was in charge of all U.S. military sales abroad, was always headed by someone placed there by members of the network, which I always refer to them as the spook network. And from 1971 to 1977 was Lieutenant General Howard M. Fish, who was one of the avid supporters of the Shah, and in 1977, he actually boasted publicly that during his tenure in his position, he handled $36 billion in arms sales, and he indicated that 60 congressional bills had been written opposing such a sales, and he proudly said that not even one had gotten out of the committee.
Okay, Farah, at this point, let's hold it at this point. I want to take a musical break just to give the audience a chance to relax, because at this point I suspect a lot of people are losing their concentration abilities. And then we'll come back, and what I would like to do would be to run through the fine points, the details of the history, as reasonably quickly as we can, with at the same time as making it clear to the audience, and take this forward to the geostrategic considerations, which impinge directly on the things that are unfolding on the world stage today, because, as you pointed out, there has been a good deal of saber-rattling in the American media over the Iranian nuclear capability. And I have been for some weeks now doing an archive program called The Terror Connection Part 3. And for many years I've been stressing that one of the main motivations for elements of our national security establishment crawling into bed with some of the very international terrorists that we are told we should protect ourselves against is, first of all, to justify domestic repression, a crackdown on civil liberties, broader police and surveillance powers, and also a more aggressive military posture abroad. If you can stage a terrorist incident or simply develop sufficient public credibility in the possibility of a terrorist incident, and a nuclear terrorist incident would be the ultimate terrorist incident, then a rationalization exists and popular sentiment exists for American military adventurism abroad. So we'll move through to the strategic considerations after a musical break, but I want to give our audience a chance to rest up so that they can absorb this critical information that you're presenting to them.
Very good.
Okay. We'll be back with you in a few minutes, Farah. And indeed, we are going to return with our visit with Farah Mansour after a musical break. And we will continue. We've got about 2 hours left in tonight's broadcast. So music and then more with Farah Mansour. Good evening, Farah. We're back live on the air.
Hi, good evening to you, too.
All righty. Now, when we last left the discussion, we were in the mid-1970s, and an individual whose name was, I have it written down here, Motazedi?
It's Mojtaba or Moji, M-O-J-I, mm-hmm. And the last name is Taherzadeh.
Taherzadeh, okay. There was, now, he was operating on behalf of the Iranian government and was securing weapons, uranium enrichment technology for the Iranian government, and it was doing so under the auspices of operations being conducted by Albert Hakim. This at a time when
one of the Albert Hakim's conduit firm in Los Angeles named Gifted Inc.
And this at the time when George Bush was director of, or some of it at least, when George Bush was director of CIA.
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, this was, in fact, with the knowledge of the United States and particularly George Bush, that when we hear that all of a sudden George Bush's administration, they were so puzzled with Iran's acquiring nuclear capabilities from different countries, it really is preposterous. Now, one thing that we have to mention at this time, why Taherzadeh's name is an important name? Because Taherzadeh, who was the director of Nuclear Research Center of Iran, by early 1978, just before George Bush, Margaret Thatcher, and Ronald Reagan visited Iran, he resigned from that post and joined General Ghalani and Khomeini's forces. And later on, as Khomeini came to Iran on February 1st, 1979...
Now, this Taherzadeh joined Khomeini?
Of course.
Okay, so in other words, basically, he's originally working for the Shah, and then he jumps to Khomeini.
That's correct.
According to conventional interpretations of Iranian history, at least what we're told in this country, that would be an extremely unlikely move to make, but as your research has indicated, one which, under the circumstances, makes only too much sense.
That's correct.
Go
now,
ahead.
The important part of this is that by the time when General Vali Gharani, who became the Iran's chief military officer during Khomeini's first government, which it was the government of Bazargan, by February 12 of 1979.
And once again, spell General Valani's name for us.
Gharani is Q-A-R-A-N-I.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Taherzadeh became Gharani's deputy in charge of Iran's military industrial complex. Now, why that is important? You remember that we talked that on February 2nd, 1979, Eric Van Marwaard, who was with the U.S. Department of Defense representing He met in Iran with General Hassan Tufanian, who was the head of the Iran's military industrial complex, and signed that memorandum of understanding, that whereby that memo gave a power of attorney to the U.S. overall Iran's outstanding military contract to have them restructured. That agency, Iran's military industrial complex, became under the control of Moji Tarzadeh.
All righty, and it should be mentioned, too, that Eric von Marbot is part of the Turple Wilson milieu, of which Albert Hakim was also a part.
That's correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, you have asked that what would be the most important thing in regard to the nuclear program in Iran.
Now, the point being, let me just sum up what we've looked at so far, for the benefit of the audience and for people who might have just tuned in, because I did get one person who just tuned in the broadcast. We've been looking at, as far as research concerning U.S. Iranian cooperation vis-a-vis nuclear technology, which began in the 70s under the Shah, obviously utilizing a Hakim proprietary, and then some of the same people, including Tarzadeh, jumped to the Khomeini forces, which had already been tabbed by the U.S. national security establishment, or the dominant elements of it anyway, as the designated anti-communist successor to the Shah in Iran. So the nuclear technology and the nuclear capability being given Iran by the U.S. and the people involved in that then jump from the Shah to the Khomeini government.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, Tarzadeh's level of commitment to the nuclear independence of Iran actually very well was illustrated in the Nuclear Research Center Progress Report, which was dated April 1977. And I quote, it says, "The next century will be the last in which we will use combustion as an energy source. To depend solely on this source would be to invite disaster. The nuclear reactor is a splendid energy source." There was a conference in Iran during that time in one of the cities which became famous for the Persepolis Conference on nuclear technology transfer. An attempt was made to establish ways in which the smaller nation can break the monopoly of the larger powers and obtain the highly advanced technology they require to serve the needs of their own people. Most countries regard nuclear power as only route to energy independence. They want to make plans for the nuclear future now. The national investment needed for the establishment of the nuclear power capability is far too great a commitment to be made if the outcome is in doubt. Now, what also is important, that Tarzadeh complained that Carter's nuclear policy would severely inhibit the development of the energy in the smaller countries, thus recreating their independence. Now, of course, you have to understand that the role that Tarzadeh was playing. So he continues, he says, "Some feel that Carter's statement implies a unilateral abrogation of the international agreement. This perception, on the one hand, weakens the confidence of other nations in the U.S. promises of nuclear fuel supplies, and on the other hand, may weaken the effectiveness of existing agreement. Another possibility that has been mentioned is the independent development of enrichment and reprocessing capabilities, okay, by other nations. Many felt that restriction of reprocessing does not effectively curb the proliferation of nuclear weapons. It is too high a price to pay for marginally effective safeguard. Reliance on restriction may hamper effort to achieve more effective means of proliferation control," close quote. Now, that would set the stage that at that time, during the Ford administration and during Mr. George Bush as a tenor, his tenor as the DCI, what was going on that they completely ignored. Now, what is significant is that the Tarzadeh's role, when he was an effective minister within the Khomeini's government, in August 22nd, 1979, an LA Times article reported by Robert Gillette, exposed this transaction during the Carter administration.
And this, when was this article published?
August 22nd, 1979.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And subsequent to that, the major investigation by Carter administration went to effect. Even Senator Cranston and even the Atomic Energy Organization wanted to investigate to find out how this transfer of technology was implemented by the United States and was sent to Iran, and what effect would that have on Iran's nuclear capabilities to actually obtain nuclear weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, at that time, Tar Zadeh was an official within the Khomeini's government.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What happens, very interesting, is that, of course, there were so many deals that was taking place behind the door. In early part of 1978, as Bush, Reagan, and Thatcher visited Iran, Tar Zadeh sends a letter to a friend in the United States, and he says this, and I quote, "I left NRC, which is Nuclear Research Center of Iran, for the reason you know, and that reason was to join Khomeini forces. My new job is not settled down yet, and that is the reason I have not been able to sign the contract I wanted. Are the lasers ready for shipment? The people at NRC are waiting for them. As far as I can judge, the professor they're talking about, Professor Erkins, who was the inventors of that laser equipment, is better not to come to Tehran at this time until situation is cleared up more." Now, that is right in the middle of the Iran revolutionary process.
And what date are we? Because we moved up to...
That would be in almost about May or June of 1978.
Okay, and because we'd had an article from 8-22-79.
That's correct.
Which was only a few months before the hostages were taken.
That's correct. Now, one thing that we find out quite interesting, on August 22nd, 1979, the article at LA Times dealing with the laser... which Gifted was involved, it includes, I quote, "Iran's National Atomic Energy Organization obtained financing in 1977 and 1978 for a small laser manufacturing firm in Los Angeles, from which Iran then purchased experiment uranium enrichment technology potentially useful in making nuclear weapons," close quote. Goes on. "One university scientist expressed astonishment that this technology had been exported to Iran and said, this should produce keen embarrassment for the United States government," close quote. It goes on. This is all a part of that article. Quote, "Enrichment is a term used to describe a process of concentrating the easily feasible form of uranium, U-325, to make a nuclear reactive fuel or atomic weapons."
U-235, isn't it? I believe.
Yes.
U-235. Go ahead.
Right. 325.
Okay.
Quote again.
Mm-hmm.
"Whatever the intention of Tehran Nuclear Research Center, it is then Director Dr. Mojtaba Tarzadeh appeared to attach special importance to these laser transactions." Goes on. 2 weeks after Tarzadeh's July visit, Liskum was reincorporated in California with new officer, director, and financier Naeem Perry. Naeem Perry was a long-time friend and partner of Albert Hakim in Malta, Multicorp, which they had so many conduit corporations that they were involved in purchasing different material for Iran during Shah's regime, and later on also they were involved with selling different things to Iran during Khomeini's regime.
Okay, now this individual's name was Perry?
Yes, P Terry.
Okay. By the way, I'm almost positive. I think you're probably looking at a typo, because I don't know. Again, I'm not an expert on nuclear matters. Not to pick nits, but I think it's U-235. I don't think there is a U-325.
Okay, that may very well be.
Probably you're looking
it's
at
really
a typo.
Typo.
But I just mentioned that because there are people who will focus on that and ignore everything else that you said the whole interview part. Say, see,
look, there's no such thing as U-325. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. There are a lot
According
of jerks around. Go ahead.
To two of the engineers, Erkins, who was actually the professor responsible for that, is hired to design the lasers and other equipment. Financial arrangement with Iran were to include stock and payments of cash to Iranian officials to facilitate the transaction, an allegation Perry and Erkins vigorously denied.
And how was Erkins' name spelled?
Erkins is E, capital E, E-R-K-E-N-S.
Okay, and he is associated with Perry. Perry is involved with Albert Hakimi in a company called Multicorp?
That's correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, not surprisingly, Torres Rider was, after that article, supposedly he was arrested in Iran, Iranian Provisional Government of Bazargan, and he was supposed to be executed, Tarzadeh. However, Tarzadeh escaped, and he went to Pakistan, where he received a new U.S. passport. Remember that all during this time, Tarzadeh was an American citizen. In December, he arrived in Washington, D.C. for debriefing by the CIA.
Okay. In December of 79?
That's correct.
Okay, and so this is after the hostages have been taken from the U.S. embassy.
That is correct.
Okay, and Tarzadeh at this point is working for the Khomeini government.
Yes.
But he is a U.S. citizen.
Right.
Okay, and he comes to the United States.
Yes.
Okay, and what transpired then?
Now the timing of exactly when Tarzadeh came to United States, arriving in the United States, is not very clear. However, what is clear, before he returned to Los Angeles, because he used to live in Los Angeles, he had two daughters living in Los Angeles. They were teenagers at the time. He sends an interesting telex. And the telex number that he sends it to Iran is 859-424-5. And the comeback number for that was INITXG. Now, he uses a name which I believe that is a code name. It says, Dear Mr. Shamlo. Now, this is S-H-A-M-L-O-O. We have been able to obtain a copy of that. It says, I have not heard anything from Tehran, especially when telephone conversation is very difficult. Washington, now he's referring to CIA, is waiting for our news which should come from Tehran. My telephone number is so-and-so. And goes on, people here have only one thing in mind at this time, regard Tarzadeh, and that one thing were the hostages. Close quote. In January 1980, Tarzadeh returned to Los Angeles. He showed up unannounced to a meeting in Beverly Hills, which shocked his partners Perry and another man, Dr. Behnia. Behnia is B-E-H-N-I-A.
Okay, by the way, before we go to this, why don't you reread that last quote for us, because it's an interesting one, and it may have escaped some of the listeners. Go ahead.
It says, Dear Mr. Shamlo, I have not heard anything new from Tehran, especially when telephone conversation is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Washington, he means CIA, is waiting for our news which should come from Tehran. My telephone number is so-and-so. People here have only one thing in mind at this time. Regards, M. Tarzadeh.
Okay, so in other words, Tarzadeh is communicating with people vis-a-vis the hostage situation.
That's correct.
Okay.
When he arrives in Los Angeles in January 1980, that really shocked his partners, Dr. Behnia and Perry, which they were partners with Albert Hakim in Multicorp in Iran, and there are documents to prove that. Now, what is surprise to them, because Tarzadeh's arrest in Iran while the investigation in United States was going on by Justice Department, and at that time, by the way, I knew this transactions, and I had some of this knowledge during that time, which I volunteered to an attorney in Los Angeles, who is at the present time a judge within the Superior Court in Los Angeles, to testify before the Justice Department fraud section with all the documents that I had. Nothing came out of it later on. And the reason that they were surprised to see him, because they were afraid that if Tarzadeh gets over here from Iran, that would jeopardize their position and they may be called before the Senate committee, which it was headed by Senator Cranston and Justice Department, that would cause a lot of embarrassing situation, and they have to answer a lot of questions, including but not limited to fabricating even the U.S. custom documents to get those laser transferred and shipped to Iran. During the nervous meeting that followed, all three agreed that the President Carter and his policies were to blame for all the losses. Tarzadeh complained bitterly that he had barely escaped with his life and had to leave everything behind, including his new wife.
This in Iran.
That's correct.
Which would sound, from what you presented to us so far, Farah, to be a less than honest response, in that he was apparently, according to your research, in bed with the Khomeini regime the whole time and therefore would not have been in danger. Am I interpreting what you're saying correctly?
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Go ahead.
They were very, they were very concerned about the U.S. government investigation, particularly the one by the Justice Department fraud section. Dr. Behnia, during that meeting, had stated that if all went according to plan, the investigation would be taken care of, and the Republicans would be back in the White House.
Repeat this, that the last two items again, because it places all of this again back right in the middle of the October surprise machinations.
That's exactly, precisely, you hit it right on the nose.
Okay, go ahead.
Dr. Behnia, Behnia, stated that if all went according to plan, the investigation would be taken care of, and the Republicans would be back in the White House. Tarzadeh concurred that there were plans afoot that, with cooperation of the Iranian, would certainly remove Carter from the office. Following this, Tarzadeh sent a telex, another telex to Iran, telex number 213387, and the comeback number is M like in Mary, F France, A Apple, R Robert, to his new wife in Iran, advising her to immediately wrap up all personal financial matters, to collect something from Atomic Energy Organization of Iran and send it out of Iran as soon as possible. A short time later, and with a period, August 1978, December 1979, missing from Mr. Tarzadeh's his own resume, because in his resume there is no mention of the role that he played in Khomeini's government, Tarzadeh landed on his feet in a new top security job at TRW in Torrance, California.
What year was this?
That is 1980.
Well, that's a very interesting place for someone like that to wind up. Not surprising, but...
That is exactly correct, because in his resume, he has got two top security clearance.
Mm-hmm.
His clearance, I believe, is K, which is for nuclear program, and another one is DOD, which is a Defense Department.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And as predicted, the Republican did regain the White House, and the U.S. government investigated were all stopped by Reagan administration. Protection of gifted by the government extended beyond the suppression of the investigation. In fact, due to internal contract dispute between some of the partners at Gifted, one of the Gifted partners sued Gifted for non-performance, and there is a case number, and I will read that, C. Luck and Charles 360757, which that case on December 27, 1985, the Superior Court Judge Jack M. Newman granted Gifted a summary judgment against the plaintiff and ordered that all records of gifted sensitive Iranian transaction, mostly military, be sealed. This is on record.
Mm-hmm.
They can go, anybody who's interested, they can go and look that up. Now, why this is important? Number one, because now we realize that the role of Mr. Albert Hakim and also his partner. Now, one would probably be surprised and say, well, who is Dr. Behnia and how would we know that these things did exist? Now, we go back. A confidential communique dated 8/24/1975 from the U.S. Embassy in Tehran during the time that Richard Helms was the U.S. ambassador in Iran says that Dr. Behnia was, quote, vice president of Multicorp, landlord of Jim McGraw, director of Project Peace Shield in Iran, and representative of many U.S. and European firms.
All right, now, two questions, Farah. What? How is that gentleman's name spelled, and what is our operation or Project Peace Shield?
Jim McGraw is J-I-M, and the last name is capital M-C, capital C-R-A-W, director of Project Peace Shield in Tehran.
Now, Project...
this was a government, a U.S. government project in Iran at the American Embassy.
Project Peace Shield was a U.S. government operation.
Sponsored in Iran.
Oh, but at the U.S. Embassy.
That's correct.
So this was not then directly related to the nuclear program?
Yes. And now, the document also indicates that Behnia's relation to Iranian commanding general, who was the air training commander, General Company Tabrizi, COMPANI-TILAKANTAM-ABRIZI, who had a lot of, quote, a lot of political influence, close quote. Now, why are these things all important? Because Hakim and his partner created a network of influential Air Force generals as their silence partner to secure cells from Iranian Air Force. Now, one of those Air Force generals was Air Force General Shapur Azarbarzin. It's S-H-A-H-P-O-U-R, and his last name is spelled A-Z-A. R-B-A-R-Z-I-N.
Alrighty.
Shapur Azarbarzin, General, became Khomeini's first Air Force General. You remember we talked about Karani talking to General Fardoush, and General Fardoush picked up the general for the head of the Air Force and head of the Navy and head of the SAVAK and also the ground forces.
Right.
Azarbarzin was one of those individuals.
Okay, and he was previously one of the people who had
connected
been,
with them.
Okay, and he was involved with the American project to stimulate weapons sales to the Iranian Air Force?
That's correct.
Okay.
He was actually one of the people in charge of buying all this.
All right.
Now, Shapur Azarbarzin, he shares offices with Naeem Perry at the present time in Beverly Hills, California.
Right now?
Right now.
And so this fellow's now in the United States.
That's correct.
Fascinating.
All right. Now, he became Khomeini's first chief of staff in February 1979, and he lives now in West Los Angeles and shares offices with Naeem Perry. Now, there was another general, there are quite a few, I don't want to throw a lot of names, but however, Multicorp, which was a parent company to many subsidiaries, privately procured advanced technology and military hardware for the Shah's Royal Air Force. For example, it was this matrix that negotiated the sale of $500 million IBEX electronic information gathering surveillance system, which could have used to gather information about dissident within Iran as well as the activities of other nations on the Persian Gulf. This IBEX project was a CIA controlled unit for Rockwell International, whose chief security officer was none other than our good friend, Gene Wheaton.